This week, a new land expropriation law in South Africa is causing a stir in the United States and beyond. The law allows the South African government to expropriate land without compensation if it is in public interest. South African authorities claim it is attempting to address racial inequality. U.S. President Donald Trump reacted, freezing all aid to South Africa of what he said are rights violations against some of its white citizens.
We find out what South Africa is doing. They're taking away land, they're confiscating land.
We are, as South Africans, a resilient people, and we will not be bullied.
What is the reasoning behind South Africa's Expropriation Act? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCorn. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa signed into law a bill allowing land expropriation by the state without compensation. Last week, President Donald Trump signed an executive order revoking aid to South Africa. And the second biggest political party of the country, the Democratic Alliance, launched a legal challenge against the new land expropriation law. To offer insight into the political and economic standoff between two major countries, we bring in our guests. From Cape Town in South Africa, we are joined by Gaopalelwe Matiba, a senior lecturer in the Department of Private Law at the University of Cape Town. From the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, we are joined by Joshua Massavi, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. And from the state of Maryland, we are joined by Piokunle Nyando, assistant director of the Center for African Studies at the Howard University. Gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Professor Nyando, if you may break it down to us, what is this expropriation law about? What does it provide for?
Whether you are for the law or not, if you are an opponent of the law, this looks like Zimbabwe 2.0, and the region of Southern Africa has a very bad experience about that. In fact, there's a 6 million people problem in South Africa as a direct result of this expropriation or a similar law in Zimbabwe. So people who are against the law, they look askance at the idea that the government of South Africa, when it finds it to the public interest, and public interest is broad here, it could be the government is redressing the past. It could be that the government sees it would like to build a project on a certain land, or whatever the case may be. But if you are an opponent of this law, you see it as a long overdue law. You see it as, you also would make the argument that South Africa is not the only country in the world that has it. Indeed, we've heard the South Africans say it's akin to eminent domain. But it is very emotive, and it comes on the heels of a very scandal-ridden South African government. So it's difficult to take the government's word for it.
Yes. And Mr. Matiba, of course, there has been reactions in South Africa, especially from the Democratic Alliance, that says this act is unconstitutional, both substantively and also procedurally. So what is it they say really is a problem with it? What is unconstitutional about it, and what is wrong procedurally, according to DA?
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Vincent, for the opportunity and for inviting me to your platform. I think the DA is challenging the constitutionality of the Expropriation Act on at least two grounds. One, on the basis that it is procedurally faulty, on the basis that the National Council of Provinces, which also plays quite an important role in the lawmaking process in South Africa, the process there did not unfold in a constitutionally eligible or permissible way, because only four provinces supported, out of nine, supported the bill, which is obviously inadequate. And on the basis of substance, the Democratic Alliance argues that the Expropriation Act is unconstitutional. A certain clause in there, specifically the one that relates to compensation, for its posture of introducing the possibility of expropriation without compensation. I must say, although, Vincent, that There is nowhere in the Act where the phrase expropriation without compensation is being made reference to. That is so untrue. The Act makes reference to the concept of nil compensation, which means that under certain circumstances, and the Act goes to as far as specifying those specific circumstances where a nil compensation would be considered just an equitable compensation in a given case. One of those instances is when, for example, the land has been abandoned by the owner, or in cases where a particular plot of land poses a significant threat or health risk, safety and health risk to the neighboring community or to other properties, the neighboring properties.
Yes.
So it is entirely true to then say that it touches farmland. Farmland is none of those considerations or circumstances under which nil compensation can be considered as just an equitable.
Yeah.
So it is
yeah.
it is just a mere propaganda and falsehood.
So perhaps the nil compensation needed a little bit of elaboration there. But Joshua Masavi, we saw the reaction from Washington was swift and really far-reaching, freezing or cancellation of aid to South Africa. Why? In your understanding, was this the reaction, and what is the understanding in Washington in terms of what's going on in South Africa?
Yeah, I think there are several reasons why there was such a swift reaction. First, if we remember back to the first Trump administration, President Trump expressed concern about expropriation. This was actually a debate all the way back then. And it was one of the few Africa issues that he really spoke about publicly. I think he referenced it multiple times even. So the fact that President Ramaphosa signed this law just a few days really into President Trump's second term was almost guaranteed to get his attention and get some swift action of the type that we've seen. So I think there was a specific link to President Trump or a specific concern that President Trump had on this issue. But it also happens in a broader context of a really deteriorating U.S.-South Africa relationship. Washington has been very concerned for years that, as the former U.S. ambassador to South Africa said, South Africa is not aligned. It is increasingly aligning with American competitors. There's a whole list of grievances here that the Americans have about how the ANC and the government of South Africa have been behaving. So that's the broader context that this happened in. So it was already a difficult and a deteriorating relationship. Then this specific issue arises that, again, President Trump has expressed concern about previously. And then it led to the action that we saw. I will note that Secretary Rubio, Secretary of State, has issued a limited waiver, so some life-saving humanitarian support will continue.
Mm-hmm. And actually, just going back, Pio Kunle, in terms of what Matiba just said, that there is no expropriation without compensation. As a matter of fact, Section 12, Part 3 says there would be a seizure of private property and without compensation under limited circumstances. And I think one of those, there are several here, but I think, for example, it says if the land being used is not being used, for example, and the owner's main purpose is not to develop the land or use it to generate income, but to benefit from the appreciation of its market value, in that kind of a situation, it could be confiscated or it could be expropriated without compensation. And there are a number of other provisions here, although it says it's limited. So it's still, I think it's accurate to say there's a provision within that act of expropriating land without compensation. Perhaps I start with Professor Mnyandwa and then we go to Matiba.
This is going to play out, of course, in the courts. South Africa is a vibrant democracy and has a culture of review. Of course, it gets caught. We get caught here in the weeds, and we must, I think Professor Motiba knows better than I what nil and without compensation mean. I would think it means the same. And I would think an abandoned farm where someone is away in Australia, it, now we must ask ourselves how long, how many years constitute abandonment, and if that farm is still dead without compensation. So I'm just being anecdotal here to express just how emotive this issue is. It was bound to be an emotive issue in South Africa because many South Africans view the issue of land as a can that the ANC has kicked down the road and now the chicken are coming home to roost. So I would say also South Africa should have been, should have early on taken the American presidency at least in its confidence and try to explain these things. That's what diplomacy is about. I would say in the last year, a few South African diplomats have made their way to Washington. But I don't think then, seeing what we're seeing now, they made a successful case or were able to explain, to make a case for South Africa successfully.
Yes. Professor Matiba, and you may chime in on that, but also, like, for example, the DA says in its appeal or rather case in court that the ANC is kind of giving itself even wider powers or trying to kind of expand the whole concept of expropriation of land for public use, but I kind of leave an open door for it to extend the powers that it can exercise in expropriating land. So is that the problem there?
Well, thanks, Vincent. That's a good question. Look, in South Africa, we have the Constitution, and the Expropriation Act is a subsidiary to the Section 25 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The Constitution, you know, guarantees and protects private property ownership. And it says that expropriation can only be legitimate if there's it is coupled with fair, just and equitable compensation. So the Expropriation Act, what it does, it doesn't deviate from the Constitution. It does in a sense that it does not take away the obligation to pay compensation on the side of the state. What the Expropriation Act is doing is simply to introduce a number, a very limited number of circumstances under which such compensation, a nil compensation, can be considered as just and equitable. That is the metrics or the standard against which we evaluate the legitimacy of expropriation conduct or act or decision in South Africa. So the DA saying that or trying to create an impression as if there will be a blanket expropriation without compensation left, right, and center in South Africa, it is so reckless and irresponsible. And I think so many attempts have been made already by many others, including myself, to try and explain that expropriation in South Africa, as understood in the context of this new act, is not devoid of compliance with international best practices. I mean, the international legal framework provides that there be compensation if expropriation is to be exercised by any state. The Expropriation Act does not nullify or take out that possibility and obligation on the side of the state. It is still there. If we were to say that, if the act was phrased in a way that says expropriation can happen without compensation, that would be problematic, because then the act would be basically taking away an obligation to pay compensation on the side of the state. But that obligation with nil compensation, it's still there.
All right. We'll come back to this and see whether this is a matter of legalese or it's some kind of a need to expound on the issue itself in the way it is explained. Well, it's time for a short break now. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the Land Expropriation Act for South Africa. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, We bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
In today's digital world, smartphones and social media have revolutionized the way we communicate, and dating is no exception worldwide, including Africa. Online dating platforms and social networks have created new opportunities for people to connect, breaking down traditional geographic and social barriers. On the next episode of Our Voices, we'll explore how men and women first connect through digital platforms and whether these connections can turn into lasting relationships. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Welcome back. You're with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington. The new South African Land Expropriation Act has caused a stir domestically and with the United States. Some experts say that the law is an attempt to redress decades of racial inequality in South Africa. Will it succeed? My guests are from Cape Town, Gapole Lwematiba, senior lecturer in the Department of Private Law at the University of Cape Town. From the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, George Masavi, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. And from the state of Maryland, Piwokunle Nyando, assistant director of the Center for African Studies at Howard University. Now, Joshua, you know, the South African president we saw there earlier on saying South Africa cannot be bullied, but the reality is that the U.S. Allocated nearly $440 million in assistance to South Africa just in 2023. So in other words, the South Africa relies quite some on the United States. Now, is this an opportunity perhaps for South Africa to engage in a more meaningful conversation with the U.S., because we know that in the last few years, there has been a little bit of friction between these two countries?
Well, I think it's an opportunity for the South African government, and specifically the dominant party within that government, the ANC, to reassess its how it has behaved over the previous years, particularly regarding issues that have concerned the United States, whether these be Israel-related issues or Taiwan-related issues or any other number of problems that the United States has noticed. I think that we're entering a new era here, clearly, and previously the ANC believed that it could continue to align more and more openly and more closely with American challengers and adversaries and still expects business as usual with the United States, which is a really important economic partner to South Africa. Most or maybe all of its assistance goes to public health in South Africa. So a major part of the public health system in South Africa has been supported by the United States. So I think the ANC will really have to consider what changes it can make in its own behavior to ensure that this relationship does not suffer a catastrophic breakdown.
Mm-hmm. Professor Nyando, it's been over, 30 years since ANC came to power, and South Africans have waited for quite a number of things to be fixed. And one would wonder, given now that the DA, for example, the Democratic Alliance, is part of the coalition in South Africa, would this be perhaps a better time to have a more robust conversation before even you get to this kind of a situation we're in today, to address issues that should have been addressed, as you mentioned, in a more systematic way over the decades?
Yes, I think so, because South Africa, if South Africa was a human being, it wouldn't be a teenager, it wouldn't be a young adult, it would be a full-grown adult, and a 30-year-old adult. And, and there usually are no excuses in life when you are 30 years old about things you cannot do. So things South Africa could get away with overlooking before, not doing its due diligence when it comes to statecraft, not sending its best people to negotiate around the world, what they call cadre deployment, where they put someone based on party loyalty than actually raw or intellectual ability. These are things that are going to continue to exert a higher cost. And with this current administration, of course, there's going to be a renegotiation of the parameters of engagement. And in such circumstances, we should always be expecting South Africa to send its best and do its best when it comes to just basic statecraft, which ambassadors it chooses, and making sure that ministers of mineral energy and energy affairs in South Africa are not saying making inflammatory remarks during a very sensitive time. So there are very basics that South Africa is getting wrong right now that it can get right.
Mm-hmm. And Professor Matiba, you know, in the past or so, concern has been raised over the fact that certain actions, even when it's kind of looks like it's an attempt to correct wrongs from the past, could incite individuals to take things into their own hands. We've seen attacks in the past where those attacks against people like, say, white South Africans have been attributed to utterances by politicians over acquisition of land that is owned by white people in South Africa. How do you prevent this by, having this kind of a law, but making it clear that it shouldn't lead to violence, for example?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for that, Vincent. I think the Act is quite generous in providing a very clear and understandable procedure of expropriation. The process is set out clearly in Chapter 4 of the Act. If I am to just briefly summarize it, it involves giving notice to expropriate to all affected parties. So the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, that is the ministry where the enforcement or implementation of this Act resides. That minister, who's in the Act referred to as an expropriating authority, and I must say that any other minister can be an expropriating authority, provided that that authority or power stems from a piece of legislation. So he has to provide notice of intention to expropriate to any other party who might be affected, might be the landowner, obviously, and any other person who might be benefiting from that property. Mm-hmm. The notice basically set out, among other things, the reasons for the intended expropriation. What are the reasons for that? Maybe the ministry or the government or the state might be actually wanting that land to roll out infrastructure development, build a hospital, build highways, build bridges, whatever the case might be, public purpose. Mm-hmm. Or public interest purposes for issues of land reform and land.
Sometimes, though, I think the issue could be trust. We've seen a lot of issues, even to do with corruption or politicization of certain actions, and that might be a reason for some to be concerned, right?
Yeah, no, that is true. But it will just depend if those concerns that are being raised by the concerned or aggrieved parties far outweighs the overall and legitimate reason accounting or warranting for expropriation, as I have said, for those public interests and public purpose needs and demands of the society. Mm-hmm. If those concerns are properly articulated, they are pleaded successfully in court, because, I mean, one other safeguard that I must highlight is that the Act does provide the landowner to can object against expropriation decision and actually take it in review to a court of law, where the court can rule either way. It can say, no, rule of thumb, the expropriation is by all means legitimate and it will therefore proceed, or no, the government, you are being arbitrary, this is not on, please stop it. So it is not like the government is off the hook with its expropriating powers and authority. It is still subject to checks and balances.
We hope that reassures those who are concerned. Joshua Mercevi, some have compared that, for example, to the eminent domain laws, even in the United States, only that we know in the U.S., it's very clear. It's clearly stated that the government can seize private property for public use as long as just compensation is provided. So if that was to be within that act, made very clear, would that reassure the U.S. as to the approach the South Africans are taking?
I think the fundamental problem here is that Washington does not trust the ANC to manage this process fairly and in a non-corrupt manner, frankly. We need to remember the ANC is one of the has extraordinary corruption problems, and it also has mismanaged its own country for decades here. So I think that is at the heart of the nervousness that Washington has about, beyond all the legal arguments. And I confess, the legal arguments can be a bit strained as people try to explain why this is similar to eminent domain, for instance. But again, the fundamental problem for Washington, it looks at the ANC's now 3-decades-long record and comes away deeply concerned about its willingness or its ability to manage something like this process honestly and fairly. And again, there's an example just to the north of South Africa in Zimbabwe. I don't believe that this is where it's headed in South Africa, but there is that history of extreme expropriation that also concerns Washington.
Well, Joshua, thank you very much. We have to leave it here. Gaopalelue Matiba, senior lecturer in the Department of Private Law at the University of Cape Town, Joshua Mercevi, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, and Piokule Mnyandu, assistant director of the Center for African Studies at Howard University. Thank you all for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.